We'll start the our Wednesday night class. So we're pleased to have Jesse with us and his lovely wife, Emily. So tonight we're going to be listening to Jesse, and he's going to talk to us on Phinehas, choosing to listen. So we're going to read from Joshua chapter 22 to introduce Jesse's words. So we'll ask Jesse to come up. Phinehas, choosing to listen.
I kind of wish I chose a shorter reading. Sit there with a mask on. It's like, thanks for reading that one for us tonight. It's a pretty incredible story, I think. Like, it takes a little bit of time. Just sort of slowly reading through it. I know for me it did. Slowly reading through it and just seeing how this all plays out. Like, obviously Phinehas shows up for us tonight. We're going to be looking at this other side, I guess, to Phinehas, to what we looked at last time. You know, I was thinking though on the way here, it's a pretty incredible blessing just to be able to come together in a little place with a few people in Adelaide, and to be able to even open our Bibles to share some time with each other. I know since we were last here, some of that news in Afghanistan, and I think I got an email just talking about some of the brothers and sisters over there, and I thought, gee whiz, like, that is just another world and so separate from us. But it makes you appreciate the freedom, I guess, we have now to be able to come here and share time with each other around God's word, which is just an incredible thing. So, yeah, our prayers obviously are going out to those brothers and sisters over there. But tonight we're going to continue looking at this story, or I guess the lessons from the man Phinehas. Last time we looked at that first instance, a pretty famous or well-known instance with Phinehas, with his extreme zeal for his God. And we looked at Balaam's influence as he sort of infiltrates the nation. But mostly I think what I wanted to try and sort of, I guess, really take away from what was happening at that time for the nation as they're just about to cross over into the promised land was this idea of separation. Because it's in this instance, remember, that they're mixing in with the nations, and I wanted to just think a little bit about what separation is, applying some of that idea or those thoughts, I guess, to us today. And I think we kind of looked at, I guess, how in times past, maybe not so much of late, but there's a little bit of a tendency, I guess, to just go about setting rules and boundaries. And I think I was talking about how that in doing that, we create an environment, I think, that means the nation for the nation themselves, they weren't seen by God as a spiritual people. And there's this obligation type thing that they're always constantly struggling with. So that was what I really wanted to, I guess, focus on. Coming out of that. And then I guess in the big picture, you look at how Jesus fulfills the principles of the law, the principles of the nation, and so much of what we see in the Old Testament. And I think we went to a quote in Corinthians where it talks about us living, or that we're in the culmination of the ages, and we have so much working for us. We can look at lessons about Phinehas and how he reacted under his circumstances, and we can look at how the nation was being worked with by God and really take that on as personal lessons for us today. I guess the other thing that we looked at was just how I think one of the things from Phinehas in that first talk, that first act that he goes about doing, is it's really easy for that to be skewed, for that to be something which is used for damage. You know, I know as brothers and sisters, we take so much time and care with each other, and yet there's things that happen that we constantly have to be making choices for, have to be making decisions, I guess, for, as to how we respond or how we react to things that we hear, to things that we see. And it's very easy for that zeal to maybe be used in a way which is more damaging than it is good. But tonight, I want to look at this instance here in Joshua 22, because I think it's where it just flips to the other side of what godly zeal is. And God does such an incredible thing, I guess, in showing us this extreme circumstance we see with Phinehas. And then he brings us further on into Joshua 22 that we read just now. And we find this next instance of that we can look at and see this character of Phinehas, and really see what godly zeal is in its complete package. So Joshua 22, when we read it there this evening, said in verse 1, Joshua, as he's come and he's called the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, he says, you've kept all that Moses, the servant of the Lord, commanded. If you just flick over to Numbers chapter 32, and we'll see exactly kind of what that is all about. This is a little later on after the events of Baal Peor and Phinehas that we looked at last time. I think that was, it's in Numbers 25. So a little bit further on, we're in now Numbers 32. And we see in verse 1, the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and a great multitude of cattle, they saw the land of Jazer, the land of Gilead, and behold, the place was good for cattle. Thanks. And so having seen that, these tribes, they see this area that's good for them. They go to Moses and Eleazar the priest, and they say, Ataroth, Dibon, Jazer, Nimrah, Heshbon, Atiliah, Sebam, Nebo, Beon. The land the Lord subdued before the people of Israel are suitable for livestock. So they want to take this little bit of land for their possession. And they say, well, when you do go over the Jordan, don't make us cross with you, because this is our bit. We want to use our land and our portion that's been allotted for us to bring our livestock and cattle. And Moses kind of replies to them, and he says, should your fellow Israelites go to war while you sit here? Why do you discourage the Israelites from crossing over into the land the Lord has given them? And if I think someone after the last time we were here, they said to me, like, the fact that they even settled in Shittim was almost a problem. Like, oh, why didn't they just go straight in to the promised land? Why did they settle? And it's true. There's this kind of sensitivity now as these Reubenites, Gadites, half-tribe of Manasseh suggest this place that they want to stay. And Moses is saying, like, you're going to discourage the whole nation from crossing over. And it goes on and it says that this is what your fathers did when I sent them to Kadesh Barnea to look out the land. Now, I guess if you think back to what that's pointing to, there was the time when Moses had asked the spies, go and spy out the land. I want you to go and see what's there, right at the beginning after they had left Egypt. And so off they go, and they came back with a message which was pretty much there's big, scary people in the land. There's walls. It's going to be impossible. Can't happen. And because of that, the Lord's anger was aroused. And Numbers 32 verse 11 says, because they have not followed me wholeheartedly, not one of those who were 20 years old or more when they came out of Egypt will see the land I promised on oath to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And he says, not one except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, the Kenizzite, and Joshua, the son of Nun. He says, for they followed the Lord wholeheartedly. And I'll there's something in that, I think, that's pretty incredible. We'll mention it later. It says, the Lord's anger burned against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years. See, Moses is cautious here. He's worried about the heart of the nation, and he hears this intent for these tribes to stay, and he's worried about what the result could be. He's sensitive about it. Turn back a few chapters to Numbers 14, and it's here that I guess we are when Moses has sent them out originally, and the spies come back with their report. In Numbers 13, they come back with the evil report, and the people begin to murmur, and they're worried, and they see these, you know, mighty men and these great walls. And in 14 verse 1, it says, all the congregation lift up their voice and cry, and the people wept all night. And they grumble against Moses and Aaron, it says. The whole assembly said to them, oh, if only we had died in Egypt or in this wilderness. And I guess, in fact, that, in a way, eventuates, because they end up wandering around that wilderness for 40 years. But as I was reading through that section, I thought there's something in the fact that the writer picks up on this man, Caleb. And just having picked out and selected an individual where he says that in verse 22 and 24, that Caleb had a different spirit within him. See, in Numbers 13, verse 24, it said, my servant Caleb, because he's had another spirit within him. I thought, you know, amongst this whole nation, amongst all the work that God is doing nationally, he's still so focused on individuals. Individuals like Caleb, who he sees and identifies something in him, something in his heart and in his spirit, and he says, that is important to me. And I think it's the same thing that we see in the character of Phinehas, a man who's zealous for his God. He's in a nation which is constantly just being weighed down, constantly missing the mark. And yet God's picking out these individuals and saying, that's what I want from my people. And I think that's why it's so encouraging and important for us then as individuals to come together, I guess, and look at these characters. Because when we do go our own ways, we know those aspects of character, those aspects of spirit that we can work on within our own lives. To come back to Joshua, because it's kind of, I guess, following a little bit of this story to see how it gets to that point that we read in Joshua 22, because it's such a funny reaction that the nation have to these little tribes, this half-tribe of Manasseh and Reubenites and the Gadites. I actually just shorten them to Ru, Gad, Men, because it gets a bit tongue-tied. But there's something going on there. So Joshua 22, which we read, they've done all that they Moses had asked of them. It said, you've kept all that Moses, servant of the Lord, commanded you. You've obeyed my voice and kept all I've commanded. And they go their way, and Joshua blesses them. You see that in verse 6. Joshua blesses them and sent them away, and they went unto their tents. And then as we read in verse 10, it comes to this point. As they come to their, that's actually a map, I guess, of the division of the tribes. So you can see Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, they're on this side of the Jordan, right? The Israelites have just crossed over 7 or so years ago here with, after the incidents of Baal's Mill, they cross over into the land and they go through, I guess, conquering Jericho, and they go in and conquer all of those parts on that side of the Jordan. And now we've come to the point where they're Reuben, Gad, and Manasseh are coming back to their allotted territories. But if you look at it, right, they're in a land. These three tribes are in this area, I guess, which the rest of the nation might be thinking, like, well, there's a little bit of a shady past that we've had there. You know, that's where Baal Peor happened. Well, just before we crossed into the Promised Land. The Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh have just crossed back over the Jordan to this area, right? And I've just spent the last 7 years with the whole nation conquering those areas over here. And if you actually look at Joshua 4, because, and it's worth probably chucking that one in your margin, because it's where they, it actually says in Joshua 4 verse 12, says, the children of Reuben, the children of Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh passed over. This is as they pass over into the land, armed before the children of Israel, as Moses spake unto them. So they did it to the very extent that they led the way in doing what Moses had asked of them. Because Moses is obviously going, look, you can't just sit here while the rest of the nation goes and has to battle through there and work out their a lot of the areas. You need to be with us. We need to be unified. And they lead the way in doing that. And now it's come, I guess, for these eastern tribes to go back and return home. And as they go back, as we read, they build an altar. Joshua 22, verse 10, it said that they came to Gelilah near Jordan in the land of Canaan. The Reubenites, the Gadites, the half-tribe of Manasseh built an imposing altar there by Jordan. And the King James, I think it says, at the passage, so that they've come back to the same point that they were at 7 years before as they crossed over that river, Jordan with the rest of the nation. It says in Joshua 22:11, when they heard that they had built an altar on the border of Canaan near the Jordan on the Israelite side, the whole assembly of Israel gathered to Shiloh to go to war against them. This is a really intense response. This isn't long after these three tribes have just led the way, been arms in arms as they've gone about helping their brothers and sisters set up on this side of the Jordan, and they've returned home, and immediately as these three tribes return to their area, the whole nation's ready to go up to war against them as they hear about an altar that's being set up. And I think this is where I guess we can start to apply the lesson, because one of the biggest things and one of the hardest things, I think, for anyone, and I know when I started even looking at Phineas, I'm probably not a very good listener. And so the story, the flow of the story, to me, just fitted so well, because you go, here's a guy who's known for his act of zeal, and as you follow through his life and you see this other side to him, I think it just shines through. His character shines through. But I think you can understand this sensitivity, I guess, of the nation as they're, you know, hearing. They've heard about this altar, and their reaction to that, considering the sensitivity of all the things that have been, I guess maybe it's understandable to some extent. And there's actually some Bible quotes. Like if you turn over to Leviticus chapter 17, it says in verse 8 and 9, say to them, any Israelite or any foreigner residing among them who offers a burnt offering or sacrifice and doesn't bring it to the entrance of the tent of meeting to sacrifice it to the Lord, they must be cut off from the people of Israel. And also there's Deuteronomy 13 verse 12 where it said, if you hear it said about one of the towns the Lord your God is giving you to live in, that troublemakers have arisen among you and have led the people of their town astray, saying, let us go and worship other gods, then you must inquire, probe, and investigate it thoroughly. And if it's true what you've heard, and it has been proved that this detestable thing has been done among you, you must certainly put to the sword all who live in that town. You must destroy it completely, both its people and its livestock. So having heard that there are signs of idol worship, of false worship, and incorrect sacrifice, the whole nation gets ready to go to war. What was that? That was Deuteronomy 13, verse 12. And I think if you think about all I've known, all the nation's known for the past 7 years is going to war. That's all I've done with and all I've dealt with as they've gone about conquering the land of Canaan. And here we are with this situation in front of us, and the children of Israel think, who better to take up the sword and to enact judgment than the man Phinehas? And we read that in the story in Joshua 22. They decide, we want Phinehas to go and lead the people against these three tribes. This man of zeal, he'll sort it out. He's a man who acted on what he knew was right. And that's true, 100% true. He took responsibility upon himself to do what God had asked. And we know from Numbers 25, he made an atonement for Israel. And then we go through this interaction, I guess, between the whole congregation and Phinehas being there with them and these three tribes. And I just want to kind of work through it a little bit and highlight, I guess, some of these, the things that they're saying. If we read from verse 16, the whole assembly of the Lord says, how could you break faith with the God of Israel like this? How could you turn away from the Lord and build yourselves an altar in rebellion against him? And these are pretty direct and heavy accusations. And they say, was not the sin of Peor, referencing 7 years ago, enough for us? Up to this very day, we're not cleansed ourselves from that sin, even though a plague fell on the community of the Lord. And are you now turning away from the Lord? You know, there's a few questions in there for me, because they've not cleansed themselves from that sin. There's still so much about what happened there that's like seriously holding the nation back. And they say, if you rebel against the Lord, tomorrow he'll be angry with the whole community of Israel. If the land you possess is defiled, come over to the Lord's land where the Lord's tabernacle stands and share the land with us. You think, well, that's actually probably quite a reasonable offer. But they're saying, don't rebel against the Lord or against us by building an altar for yourselves other than the altar of the Lord our God. And they say, remember Achan, the son of Zerah? He was unfaithful in regard to the devoted things. And didn't the wrath of God come upon the whole community of Israel? And Reuben, Gad, and the half-tribe of Manasseh reply, and they say, the mighty one, God, the Lord, the mighty one, God, the Lord, he knows, and let Israel know. If this been in rebellion or disobedience, don't spare us this day. We have built our own altar to turn away. If we've built our own altar to turn away from the Lord and to offer burnt offerings and grain offerings, or to sacrifice fellowship offerings, may the Lord himself call us to account. They say, no, we did not, for fear that someday your descendants might say to ours, what do you have to do with the Lord, the God of Israel? So that there's this genuine concern that this big thing, the river that's dividing them up, is going to cause their descendants to be separated from the house of Israel. That these three nations see themselves as part of the house of God. They see themselves as part of the nation. And they're so worried that as time passes, because of some differences, that they're going to be disassociated, that they build this altar. They build this altar, which is a witness. Something which was going to remind their children that this is the point that, and it looked over the River Jordan, and it was to remind them and to remind their offspring that there was a unity amongst the nation. And as that interaction takes place, I imagine Phineas standing there with those people. There would have been mixtures of anger, mixtures of worry and fear, so many different emotions that could have driven that nation to do something that they would have most likely regretted. But it says in verse 30, when Phineas the priest and the leaders of the community, the heads of the clans, heard what Reuben and Gad and Manasseh had to say, they were pleased. You know, we read in that Deuteronomy quote, they were to probe, to listen, to make some genuine effort in listening to their brothers and sisters. Deuteronomy said, put them to the sword. If you find that what's happening is actually wrong, and that they are going to create this, you know, incredible false worship altar, then yes, that would need an extreme action in that circumstance. And funnily enough, later on, Phineas shows up in Judges 20. We won't turn there. It's where the Benjamites have committed a terrible sin with the Levite's concubine. And Phineas is mentioned in Judges 20, verse 26 to 27, as the man who stood before the Ark of the Covenant. And at that point, he does take up the sword because he has heard what they've done with the Levite's concubine, and he leads the nation in their condemnation or their war against the Benjamites. But in this circumstance, the ability to take a step back, to be able to listen and to take on board what he heard from his brothers and sisters, Reuben, Gad and Manasseh, it says in verse 31 that Phinehas, son of Eleazar, said to Reuben, Gad and Manasseh, "Today we know the Lord is with us, because you've not been unfaithful to the Lord in this matter. Now you've rescued the Israelites from the Lord's hand." And you see, it's almost like a reversal. By Phineas' ability to listen in this point, he's created a circumstance where what Manasseh, Gad and Reuben have done have saved the deunification, I guess, of the tribes. And for that reason, it's kind of a funny name, but they call the altar Ed. There's actually no real... I kind of was trying to find out like where else is Ed in the Bible and things like that, but I think it was like it's in italics, so I don't even know if it's an actual Hebrew word. It's just what the writers said. Well, we'll use this as a reference or a witness between us. Because that's it's as simple as that. It's what it was. These three tribes wanted to set up something to remind their children, not to cause any false worship, not to do anything sinister. And so I think incredibly lucky that Phineas had the character to be able to zealously listen to his brothers and sisters. And, you know, I even thought that there's two altars that were built. If you think when they crossed over, when the nation crossed over a few years back, they cross over the River Jordan, a symbol of life. And you see, I guess that's that symbology of the river that's streaming down towards the Dead Sea. And the priests, you'd remember, they stood in the midst, creating a way through to the land of promise. And that first altar was built with 12 stones to witness the unity of the tribes, even though there were, in fact, some that were settled on this other side. And then as these tribes go back, they build another altar. I think it's just something poetic almost about what they did there, wanting to make sure that they remembered all that God had done for them. I think so often all God wanted from the nation was remembrance. He wanted remembrance of things that had been done for their benefit. In this instance, the character of Phinehas, it doesn't come crashing through and looking to ruin the camps of Reuben and Gad and the half-tribe of Manasseh. He takes that time to listen. He takes that time to inquire, to probe and to investigate it thoroughly. He's not just overcome with past experiences. And I think it's such a volatile environment that's happening there, because you can't discredit the past experiences maybe, but being able to just listen, I think there's something incredible about that character. I think it's evidence that Phinehas continues to grow in his zeal and his love for God after the events of Peor. Doesn't just stop with one great act. This is a man that continued to grow in his spiritual life and his love for God. And so I thought, the lesson for me is seeing the importance of choosing to listen to our brothers and sisters, listen to our peers, listen to our friends, listen to our families, to be able to take that step back and give them time to talk. It's actually a lost art, I think. If you even just think about how the world is today, and this is, I guess, zooming out even more, everyone has a voice. Everyone has something to say. Everyone's busy yelling their opinion, their agenda, and that ability and that art of listening is lost even in a world around us. And those things affect us. I know it affects me that the way that we are as a whole existence of human beings, when you're in this environment which is constantly speaking and look at me and this is what I have to say, it becomes really hard. And that art of simply just stepping back and listening, I think, is lost. And so we need to be able to make that choice as people who are believers, as people who look to God to understand truth, to be able to take that step back, to be able to listen to each other and to the people around us. You know, as I was thinking, I guess, about the whole picture of Phinehas, from what we looked at last fortnight in his zeal to the man who then listens, and you get this complete package. I was talking to a couple of my mates about it, and a couple of them said to me, like, oh, it's like Elijah in the still small voice. I thought, well, I hadn't thought of that, so I'll go and have a look. So I wanted to mention the man Elijah. If you turn over to 1 Kings, because I feel like it gives just another little insight into what I'm talking about. 1 Kings 19. 1 Kings 19. I'm in the second there. First Kings 19, verse 10. He's trying to get away from Jezebel, because she's gone and slain all the prophets with the sword. And he flees. And in verse 9, we find him in a cave, and he's lodged there. And the word of the Lord comes to him and said unto him, what doest thou here, Elijah? And he said, I've been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, for the children of Israel have forsaken thine covenant and thrown down your altars, slain your prophets with the sword, and I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away. See, here's Elijah, and he's on his own. He's full of zeal for his God. He's jealous. And he's saying, the nation, they've forsaken the covenant. It's only me left. Something needs to be done, God. And God says to Elijah, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. And a great wind tore the mountains apart and shattered the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. After the wind, there was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. After the earthquake came a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. So God uses a loud wind, an earthquake and a fire, and they're extreme events which show us his power. But at this point, God is teaching Elijah the lesson, I don't always have to work in loud extremities. It's not always going to be the extreme action. Rather, after all of these extremities that Moses is seeing in front of him, a still small voice. I just think, man, that is like settling. It gives you that perspective that we don't have to go out and get everything right, make sure everyone's doing the right thing. We can actually take the time to step back and compose ourselves, to step back and take the time to listen to the people around us. You know, at times maybe we think like, we're the only one. But God teaches Elijah that time and that lesson of taking a step back, actually believing that God is in control, even in little things, even when it's not some extreme action. And I thought, you know, when that lesson, I guess, over the board of Phinehas is in front of us, and I'm talking to my mates, and they say, oh, that's like Elijah. And I go and look at it, and I thought, that does just ring true to me. The lesson that God is in control, actually trusting that God is in control. Because I think Phinehas, when he chose to act, believe God was in control of the circumstances in front of him, even though they were extreme, he trusted God. When it comes to him going and speaking to his brothers and sisters, he's trusting in God. Believing that God is in control. Because that takes away the need for us to be in control. The feeling that we need to outline boundaries and outline rules to ensure that nothing bad ever happens. I think we're in an age and a day where what Jesus Christ has taught us and what he shows us teaches us so much to be able to take a step back and listen to each other. I just want to finish, I guess, with looking in Galatians chapter 6. I was reading it this afternoon again, and I just thought, man, that is an incredible couple of verses. Galatians chapter 6. I don't know, I think I went to Galatians 5 actually, and with the fruit of the Spirit at the end of the last class. And we were thinking, I guess, about that Spirit within us. That ability we have today to show those fruits of love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there's no law. Galatians in chapter 6 verse 1 says, brothers and sisters, if anyone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit, people who are specially set out, set aside for God. People like Phineas, people like Caleb. You should restore the person gently. But watch yourselves, or you also may be tempted. And it says, carry each other's burdens. You know, that is an environment where fellowship is at its fullest. A place where we can come knowing that the people we're with are here to carry one another's burdens. And it says, in this, you will fulfill the law of Christ. The law of Christ, John 13, verse 34, love one another. If anyone thinks they are something when they are not, they deceive themselves. Each one should test their own actions. Then they can take pride in themselves alone without comparing themselves to someone else. For each one should carry their own load. And so I hope that we can take away from the man Phineas and the story, I guess, of Phineas, the perfect balance of godly zeal. A man who chose to act justly. A man who chose to listen carefully. A man who made godly choices because he just understood what God required of him. You know, I think Phineas, well, he leads me to think deeply about the decisions and the choices that I make towards my brothers and sisters, the people that I love. Phineas leads me to think about how I should best act and how I should listen to the people around me, how I should best walk before my God. Now, I wanted to finish with the same quote from Micah, because Micah, he brings up and asks the nation to remember the events of Baal Peor. And at the very end of that chapter in Micah 6, he says, he showed you, O man, what is good. What does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. And I just think that summarizes the man Phineas beautifully. So thanks, I guess, for having us here on the couple of nights. I always love getting out to small meetings and catching up with everyone. So, yeah, thanks for having us.